This installment is a replay of New World Notes number 82, first broadcast in September 2009. I like it a lot. Hope you will too.
This is the most romantic day of my whole life.
This is the story we're going to tell our grandchildren.
Barbara and Oliver Rose.
Wait a minute, wait, what's your name?
Barbara!
They met great.
I love rain.
God, I love it too.
They agreed on that.
Are you happy?
I'm more than happy. I'm married.
This house is so beautiful. And we live here.
House, car, boy, girl, puppy, kitty. The poor bastard's never had a chance.
Welcome to New World Notes, edited by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. This week, New World Notes asks the question, can this honeymoon be saved? In 1953, Dorothy Cameron Disney began editing one of the longest-running features in the history of magazine publishing. It appeared in each monthly issue of the Ladies' Home Journal for the next 30 years. It was called, Can This Marriage Be Saved? As I recall, each installment had three parts. One from the unhappy woman, man, and equally unhappy marriage counselor. 1. Barbara's story. 2. Oliver's story. 3. Dr. DeVito comments. Like my ancestress Cassandra, I'm not at all happy to be proved right. Emotionally, I so wanted to be wrong on this. I so wanted Obama to be what Obama almost appeared to be. What so many Americans wanted him to be. A leader, leading in the opposite direction. The savior who would fight against the Pentagon goons and the Wall Street highwaymen and the big oil highwaymen and the torturers and the Bush crowd who saw what all Americans held sacred as their personal toilet. God, I wanted to be wrong about what I thought about Obama. I wanted to believe that Ted Kennedy's words at the 2008 Democratic Convention had the slightest chance of being true. Alas, I, Tiresias, old man with wrinkled dugs, perceived the scene and foretold the rest. I, too, waited the expected guest. And yes, I, too, have descended to quoting from T.S. Eliot's The Wasteland. So, let's listen to the late Senator Ted Kennedy at the Democratic Convention, explaining what we could all expect from the expected 8-year guest in our White House.
We will break the old gridlock and guarantee that every American, north, south, east, west, young, old, will have decent quality health care as a fundamental right and not a privilege. Can meet these challenges with Barack Obama. Yes, we can, and finally, yes, we will. Barack Obama will be a commander-in-chief who understands that young Americans in uniform must never be committed to a mistake, but always to a mission worthy of their bravery.
Did somebody mention Afghanistan? No, I didn't think so. For Bush, Afghanistan was just a public relations stunt, pretending he was after Osama bin Laden to ease the transition to his real first goal, the conquest of oil-rich Iraq. Control of Afghanistan could come later. That was then. This is later. But enough of reality. Let's get back to the heady days of the affair that preceded the honeymoon. Many of us, understandably, were in love with the fantasy of such a beautiful, articulate president as Obama being ours, alone, forever. 21st century Camelot, as promised by the sole surviving brother of the late King Arthur of Massachusetts,
Regnet 1961 to 1963. I even took a genuine liking to Obama Girl.
Thank all of you for your time, your suggestions, your encouragement, and your prayers. And I look forward to continuing our conversation in the weeks and months to come.
Hey, B, it's me. If you're there, pick up. I was just watching you on C-SPAN. Anyway, call me back.
You seem to float onto the floor. Democratic Convention 2004. I never wanted anybody more than I want you. So I put down my carry sign. Knew I had to make you mine. Smile black and sexy, you're so fine. Cause I got a crush on Obama. I can't wait till 2008. Baby, you're the best candidate. I like it when you get hot on Hillary in debate. Won't you pick up your phone? Cause I got a crush on Obama. I can't wait till 2008. Baby, you're the best candidate. Up in the Oval Office, you'll get your head of state. I can't leave you alone. Sean Obama, you're into border security. Let's break this border between you and me. Universal healthcare reform, it makes me warm. You tell the truth unlike the right. You can love but you can fight. You can Barack me tonight.
But to return to madness, my own particularly, here's what I wrote in this show's newsletter just a few days after the results of the national election of 2008 were announced. This essay is titled Department of Party Pooperage. Since Wednesday morning, much of the music broadcast by local community radio stations has been celebratory, inspiring, happy, as though the Lord were being thanked, a sigh of relief were being breathed, and, as on the New Yorker cover, daylight had appeared at the end of a long, dark, blood-red tunnel, even on Ed McEwen's Counterwall show. Even as I write, WWUH is playing Three Dog Night's ancient pop hit, "The world is black, the world is white, it turns by day and then by night, a child is black, a child is white." Sorry about the singing. America. Full disclosure, I'm the culprit that urged Ed to play America, Roy Zimmerman's comic anthem, with its glorious and genuinely inspiring finale.
America is a dream of freedom, dreamed by everyone all over the world. God bless the normal people and the ones with every known word. And God bless America.
It just might work.
America, it just might work. Keep working. And it just might work.
Continuing with my newsletter essay, from an old News from Lake Wobegon episode, came a phrase that continues to resonate for me. Garrison lamented that, unlike the majority of Wobegonians, he had never received, quote, the gift of faith, unquote. Here I'm with Garrison rather than with, say, Christopher Hitchens, who lately has been giddily celebrating his own atheism. Some of us deeply yearn for a deus ex machina to come and pull humanity out of our misery. De tenebris, etc. Faith would be a very great comfort. Faith in Jesus, in history, in science, in the words of a holy book, in the human intellect, in whatever. Even in a more mundane level, to have faith that President Obama will lead America back in the direction of democracy and will make the world a better place. Last Monday, that is the day before the election, Obama supporter Michael Moore expressed not faith, but at least hope. Hope that, beginning January 20, President Obama, like every other elected politician, will commence to break every campaign promise he had made. Much as I admire Moore's softcore cynicism, I cannot share even that modest hope. Newly elected presidents, especially Democrats, break most of their promises that would benefit the people. Recall William Jefferson Clinton. But can you recall any promise a candidate made to Wall Street, or to the military-industrial complex, or to other big business? That is, to those who paid his campaign expenses, that he or she subsequently failed to keep? I can't recall any. It's my curse. To paraphrase the ditty we used to sing circa 1965, every party needs a pooper, that's why the Dems invited me. Party pooper, party pooper. Admittedly, the gods, if they exist, never promised either me or my unhappy ancestress Cassandra a rose garden. But did they have to plop us in the middle of the wasteland? I, Tiresias, old man with wrinkled dugs, perceived the scene and foretold the rest. I, too, awaited the expected guest. He, the young man carbuncular, arrives, one of the low on whom assurance sits as a silk hat on a Bradford millionaire. The time is now propitious, as he guesses. And, if you know Eliot's poem or Savior Norton anthology, you know what happens next. To spare you the agony of wondering, I will tell you now. The person who invited him over for dinner loses her virginity. To update and Americanize the text, just substitute hedge fund manager for Bradford millionaire. One of the low on whom assurance sits as a silk hat on a Bradford millionaire. And yes, you're right. The writing of most people who hail from Missouri don't usually need much additional Americanizing. Stanley Elkin, Mark Twain, you'd hardly have to change a word. Did I say Obama's war in Afghanistan? Silly me. I meant Obama's war in AFPAC.
And just across the border, there's another war being fought, with perhaps even greater consequences. Pakistan, not Afghanistan, is where bin Laden and Al-Qaeda are thought to be.
We don't go into sovereign countries, and you know, unless we're invited in.
Whether or not the U.S. has been invited into Pakistan, they're certainly there. Currently, the Americans' most visible presence comes in the form of drone attacks, supposedly targeting Taliban and Al-Qaeda leadership. Although the reality is, it's civilians who pay the highest cost. The attacks have killed around 700 to date.
Former National Security Advisor Brent Scowcroft.
When they're used with great discrimination and great precision, they can be very useful. But when they're not, they can be very destructive to our own goal.
Congressman Keith Ellison.
Clearly, when you have a drone strike that kills a wedding party of 90 people, when you're really after one person, maybe even you didn't get that person, this contributes to the problem. This allows hostiles to say, see, this is against Islam, this is against our way of life, and it fuels that fire.
Unembedded independent journalist Jeremy Scahill.
$787 million has been budgeted now to build this huge U.S. compound in Islamabad. The message that sends, that building that kind of a structure sends, is one of contradicting the official line that we're not going to stay here forever. Building those kinds of facilities sends a message that the U.S. is there to stay.
Some even argue that U.S. actions in Pakistan foster the very instability that America claims is trying to quell. A recent Al Jazeera poll found that Pakistan is considered the United States, not the Taliban, to be the greatest threat to their country.
It should be scary to Americans to hear the results of that Al Jazeera poll, because it really yanks naked. The cold hard fact, and that is that the United States is losing in every possible way in Pakistan and Afghanistan.
So what do some of the Afghans, who the U.S. says it is trying to help, actually think?
The new strategy of Obama to send another more than 20,000 troops to Afghanistan is like a bad news to Afghan people. They are bombing under the name of killing Taliban, they are just bombing different villages, they are killing ordinary people. This is not liberation. This is invasion, occupation, and just destroying lives.
Like many in Afghanistan, Shazia believes the country's problems can only be solved by Afghans.
History has shown that no country can grant freedom, peace, democracy, all these values to another country as a gift. Because this is the responsibility of our own people to attain and to achieve all these values.
Jeremy Scahill.
In the second quarter of 2009, President Obama increased the number of security contractors in Afghanistan by about 29%. They still operate with very shaky accountability structure in both Afghanistan and Iraq. In fact, Blackwater operatives in May allegedly shot an Afghan civilian whose car came too close to them. In a very similar story to that which has happened repeatedly in Iraq, and this is causing problems in diplomatic circles between the Afghans and the Americans. You almost have an Iraq scenario playing out again.
Perhaps it's unsurprising that this administration isn't that different from its predecessor and how it fights wars.
Since 2001, you know, we've seen our military budget go from about $290 billion a year to close to $700 billion a year.
You know that Hillary Clinton was the number one recipient of defense industry dollars in the 2008 campaign? The Democrats got more money from the war industry than the Republicans. Why? The war industry is an equal opportunity giver. They don't care who's in power. They just want to be on the right side of power.
We have allowed diplomacy and development to atrophy.
You know, war is a racket, like Smedley Butler said, but it's also business. And business has been very, very good in the U.S. since 9/11 when it comes to the war industry. This is a spit in the ocean of history. And the United States is repeating a mistake that was made by the British, made by the Russians. And why do we think we're going to succeed? What, we're somehow smarter than other empires that tried to do it? No.
When recently asked, what is victory for the U.S. in Afghanistan? The U.S. ambassador to the region, Richard Holbrooke, gave the perplexing answer, he'll know it when he sees it. President Obama has made considerable political mileage by claiming he's inherited the mess in Afghanistan from the Bush administration. Now, the stakes have never been higher, especially for Afghans. More soldiers, more contractors, more deaths, and no end in sight. And with the surge of troops, this is now very much Obama's war.
Barack Obama will be a commander-in-chief who understands that young Americans in uniform must never be committed to a mistake, but always to a mission worthy of their bravery.
Think of that day.
gave. The Lord's Prayer said and the anthem sang. A man said, folks, would you bow your heads for a list of local Vietnam dead? Crying all alone under the stands was a piccolo player in the marching band, and one name read, nobody really cared. But a pretty little girl, bow in her head. I cried, never gonna hold the hand of another guy, too young for him and older, waiting for the love of the traveling soldier. Our love will never end, waiting for the soldier to come back again. Never more to be alone, well, the letter said, the soldier's coming.
It always starts with the little things.
And that phony laugh.
Okay. All right, maybe overdid it. Let me have it. If love is blind,
now I got you.
Marriage is like having a stroke.
When I watch you eat, when I look at you lately, I just want to smash your face in.
Smash my face.
I want a divorce.
You can't have one. When a couple starts keeping score, there is no winning. It's only degrees of losing.
I am the one who found this house. I bought everything in it.
With my money. It's a lot easier to spend than it is to make it, honey bun.
You might not have made it if not for me, sweet cakes.
Never underestimate her as an adversary. Don't even talk to her, bitch.
Scum. Filth.
These people are going to hurt each other.
Get out of the car, hon.
And when trouble begins, it comes at you from directions you'd never expect. We haven't passed any point of no return.
I have.
Michael Douglas.
Nobody who makes pate this good can be all bad.
Kathleen Turner.
That depends on what the pate is made of.
And Danny DeVito.
Sounds like a fairy tale, doesn't it?
The War of the Roses, directed by Danny DeVito. Coming this Christmas.
When did you realize that the relationship had gone horribly, horribly wrong? Was it when you realized that Obama, in fact, had no particular health care reform plan in mind? That he's doing everything he can to kill single payer? And that his chief concern is protecting the scandalous profits of the insurance companies and drug companies? Was it when you caught him doing nothing to withdraw from Iraq? Horribly escalating a small war in Afghanistan into a big, big war? And then, may Allah the Merciful show us more mercy than we deserve,
starting a war in the nuclear-armed Muslim country of Pakistan. Was it when you saw him and Bernanke giving millions upon trillions of dollars to the Wall Street shysters who destroyed the real economy, to say nothing of your 401k, yet can't find a cent to create jobs, stop people from losing their homes, or help what's left of the only institution that has helped working people prosper, our labor unions? Or was the moment when you realized that the budget Obama submitted to Congress gives more money to the warmongers than any budget even George W. Bush ever submitted?
In financial news, the Obama administration's predicting a $9 trillion deficit over the next 10 years. This year's deficit is expected to reach $1.6 trillion, the highest on record. Despite the budget woes, the Obama administration has rejected calls to lower U.S. military spending, by far the highest in the world.
What do you think now of your decision, if in fact you had made such a decision, that handsome, sexy, smooth-talking Barack Joe Camel Obama would be a better mate than that fusty old Ralph Nader? Or maybe you felt that Cynthia McKinney, unlike the Barack star, was just a bit too swarthy? Yes, of course, I stole that line from Gwendolyn Brooks. Don't you think I know that? Besides, it's not plagiarism, it's homage. Thanks for listening. New World Notes comes to you from the spacious underground studios of WWUH-FM, a community service of the University of Hartford. Most of the recordings you heard today were lightly edited by me. They were Seriatim, the trailer for Rupert Murdoch's movie War of the Roses, the late Ted Kennedy's address to the 2008 Democratic Convention, courtesy of C-SPAN, Obama Girl's seminal music video, I've Got a Crush on Obama, courtesy of Barely Political and YouTube, selections from the documentary Obama's War, from the Al Jazeera English TV program Fault Lines, August 20th, 2009. Kennedy again. That's my doing, not Al Jazeera's. Most of the Dixie Chicks' Traveling Soldier, live version, from their music video courtesy of YouTube. And Amy Goodman selected headlines from Democracy Now, August 26th, thanks to democracynow.org. For more information, start at our webpage, http://newworldnotes.blogspot.com. The opinions expressed in this program are totally rejected by everyone connected with this station, so if you don't ever hear me again, don't be surprised. From darkest New England, this is Kenneth Doust, wishing you a good week and advising, illegitimae non carborundum, keep the faith, please tune in again, and to paraphrase Phil Berrigan, let's try to live each day as though the truth were true. Ciao!